2 p.m. on May 5th, 2020. You can participate in this hearing by going to our Zoom meeting link in our agenda posted online at www.boston.gov/public-notices/115-66116 or by calling 929-205-6099 and entering ID 923-3774-0653 #. You can also submit written comments or questions to southendldc@boston.gov or via Twitter at Boston Landmarks. Today, the commission will be holding a public hearing to review design review applications. In accordance with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts executive order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, we are conducting this meeting online. To ensure public access to the deliberations of the South End Landmark District Commission, the public may access this call through telephone and video conferencing. Members of the public will have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you are calling in and cannot use the platform, you can send your questions to staff via, just 1 second. Sorry, I have another phone ringing in the background. Had to take care of that. Just 1 minute. Or you can send your, I lost my place. So if you are calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press 9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via at southendldc@boston.gov or via Twitter by tagging the Twitter handle at Boston Landmarks with the hashtag #SEMay5Hearing. Each person will have 2 minutes. We will wait at least 2 minutes to allow public to submit questions. So Mary, are you timing that?
So John, we actually don't have to wait the 2 minutes yet because we haven't gotten to the presentation. So you can actually go right into the design review hearing.
Okay, great. So starting with the design review hearing, first application, that's application 20.973. That is Tremont Street between Massachusetts Avenue and Arlington Street. And the work is to modify the Tremont Street layout and intersections, construct raised crossings, built islands, and raised bus stop platforms, and relocate select utilities. Is the applicant here and ready?
Hey. My name is John Monticelli, representing the Boston Transportation Department.
John, before you get started, I just need to stop my screen share and restart it because it's not allowing me to scroll forward. So just
okay.
Give me 1 second. Sorry, guys. Okay. All right. Can everyone see this?
Yes, so far.
Great. All right, John, you can go ahead now.
Super. Okay. As I said, my name is John Monticelli, representing the Boston Transportation Department here for our redesign proposals. We are looking at the section in the south end here between Mass Ave and Arlington Herald Street. Next slide, please. This just gives you a bit of a map overview there. Next slide. The reason this street has come up as a proposal for us, it was identified as a corridor in Go Boston 2030, Boston's city transportation planning initiative, as a corridor that was selected by the public for to be reimagined as a neighborhood complete street, as well as a number of very serious pedestrian crashes that we've had in the last few years, two fatalities and almost 25 serious crashes that have resulted in the last couple of years as well. One of the greatest variables we've noticed in some of those crashes is what we call a multiple threat crash. And it happens where there are two lanes of traffic and a lack of traffic control itself. So we have a pedestrian, as you can see in the image, trying to cross the street. That first car sees them, generally no problem, yields to them. And then the person in that leftmost lane does not see them, does not yield. The rate of that is much, much lower. So we find that those instances are causing a high proportion of our serious and fatal crashes. Next slide, please. This here, I wanted to outline the amount of our timeline for public engagement. You can see we started back in fall 2017, identified the corridor, and then we worked through a number of public meetings, business outreach. We actually went out to the businesses twice in the span of a couple of years just to make sure that we were engaging with them, finding out what their needs are, allowing them to contribute to how we were reimagining the corridor, and then a series of targeted public engagement meetings at Castle Square, Via Victoria. We went down to People's Baptist when that area was involved in the original plan. And then we held a number of office hours at the BPL South End Library. Next slide, please. Just wanted to highlight our collaborative engagement with our internal agencies, our Commission for Persons with Disabilities, Public Works, obviously the MBTA, Mayor's ONS, and then Water and Sewer for critical infrastructure. Next slide, please. Okay, you don't want them to shove your screen. So as Commissioner Amadeo said, our project scope is really going to be limited to lane and dimension allocation along the roadway between the curbs, changes to how our signals work to better prioritize and serve pedestrians, and to reevaluate how they are or are not serving vehicular traffic as well. Looking at where our bus stops are located and improving the built infrastructure for those. Crosswalk improvements, primarily along Tremont Street, raising those side street crossings, and then the crossings on Tremont, providing built protection for the interaction between pedestrians and vehicles. And then looking at along the curb, up and down the corridor again, as I said, working with residents and businesses to kind of reevaluate what's going on with those signs. So next slide, please. Considerations, just wanted to make it clear what we're doing. We're talking about applying the best practice tools for pedestrian safety and conspicuity. Adequate turning lanes, because we understand that there are demands for vehicle traffic on the street, and we wanna make sure that we're providing them in a targeted way where they're most effective. Dimensional requirements for our fire department vehicles. We've been in conversations with them about what their vehicles need so that we can design the built features to those specifications. Honoring the historic requirements for the tactile pads. I've spoken to Mary several times about the federal code for that. So making sure that we're doing that and the appropriate replacement of bricks in the furnishing zones on the sidewalks. Next slide, please. Just a quick run through here, and this intersection I wanted to choose as kind of a neutral example. It gave a good visual for most of the built elements that we were including in the proposal. So as you see here, pedestrian crossing islands. So those smaller ones, that first arrow, really just is a smaller little piece inside of the intersection. And what it does is it kind of enforces a wider turning radius for vehicles coming off the side street so that there's an appropriate amount of visibility for pedestrians crossing the street and motorists are making that turn more slowly. The second arrow down there you'll see is a little bit larger. And what that does is it kind of makes permanent what we would call daylighting. And it's really just a setback from the crosswalk to make sure that there's enough visibility of a person standing in the crosswalk and someone driving down the street, that they would have enough time to have that visual interaction at this intersection. Next slide. As I said, raised crosswalks. I'll give a better visual, an example in real life. But what we want to do is bring up those crossings along Tremont Street, coming from the side streets, bring those up to sidewalk level so that a pedestrian, as you're walking down the street, you're at the same exact level from one side to the other. You're not going down into puddles in the spring or snowbanks in the winter. You're kept up at the sidewalk level there. It improves our accessibility and it really improves the pedestrian experience along here. Next slide, please. Bus boarding islands, again, working with the T. What we're doing is we're basically establishing a platform area out against the street where a bus can pull right up to, and then riders can board and alight the bus right there. It solves our problem of the bus trying to fit into stops that might not be long enough or just kind of obstructed in other ways. It also improves the visibility communication between potential riders and the bus drivers as well. In making those platforms actually regain a couple parking spaces along the corridor. So our math kind of works out a little bit better. Next slide. This here is one of the unique platforms. We're integrating an accessible path. The two spaces there on the right, we have a few accessible spaces along the corridor and we integrated how those individuals would get back to the sidewalk in light of having that parking floating out away from the curb. So we wanted to integrate that design. Next slide. And lastly, a curbside parking protected bike lane. The black solid lines you see there in the buffer between the parking and the bike lane are our delineation materials. And again, I'll get into that in just a little bit. So. Next slide. Great. Next slide again. Yep. Again here, talking about the slush and the rain, not a great experience for pedestrians and an almost impassable circumstance for anyone who happens to be using a mobility device or a carriage or a shopping cart or any of those types of things. And then on the right, you can see where that pedestrian, that gentleman has just crossed the street and you can see how far away the provided crosswalk is. Next slide. Here we have two examples of real life, the raised crossings. On the left is over by the MFA, Hemingway at Forsyth. That is a bit more of a gentle incline. So you can kind of fit the grades in different circumstances. The one in Cambridge is a little bit more along the lines of what we would be seeing for the dimension of the ramp up, the crossing, and then the ramp down back to a main street like that. So, next slide. Talk about some changes at the corners. I just wanted to give another example here, visual on what these built pedestrian islands accomplish, right? So you can see that the pedestrian there is walking through a protective island. The vehicles that would be approaching from where you are viewing the slide can have a much clearer line of sight for that individual, a much, much clearer interaction with those elements. And then you can go to the next slide as well, please. And you can see here, this is a little bit of a smaller dimension. None of the plantings are included, but it does allow for the pedestrian, an individual to go from the sidewalk on the right-hand side, cross a facility, and then be positioned in a way where it's much easier to then cross the street. And then the smaller little pieces with the flex posts kind of in the middle of the view would serve that hardening of that turn for those vehicles. So they're slowing down as they're coming off of the side street and they're not, you know, hitting the gas and going through that crosswalk there. Next slide. Okay, next slide. Just a bit of a visual for the boarding islands there. So what happens is the bike facility would be behind the boarding island. You can see the boarding island in this example on Comm Ave is to the right. It's adjacent to the travelway. The bus pulls up directly against that curb. The riders would board and alight the bus. Yep, you can go to the next one actually. This is an example from Summer Street here. You can see the bus along the curb there. Folks waiting on the platform, cyclists approaching and yielding to people crossing from the sidewalk to the platform itself. Next slide. And then this is just an example of real life here. We're talking about a raised cycle track crossing. What it does is it prioritizes the pedestrians crossing from the sidewalk to the bus stop platform. So the San Francisco example is more pertinent to us. A very isolated crossing where the conflict would happen and a much easier to navigate situation. Next slide. Next slide. So these are generally representative of the materials that we're looking to separate the bike lane out. It's a low curb stop style precast concrete curbing, and it would fit within the buffer between the parking lane and the bike lane. It improves the ability for our city teams to maintain the facility and allows for a much more physical delineation between the parked cars and the bike cyclists that are traveling through there. Next slide, please. Here you can see an example over on Columbus Ave. We do have, you can just see an example of the maintenance vehicles for our public works teams sweeping and plowing the bike facility. Those flex posts are in actually in good shape in the photo, but their life cycles are not very long-lived with our recurring snow and salt and assorted things like that are just being hit by vehicles over time. So the concrete curbing being low as a parking stop style, actually it improves the life cycle of those materials a lot longer. And so they need to be replaced a lot less. Next slide. Next slide. So there is one location where we have a mid-block crossing. Here is Appleton, just across from the Castle Square development. It's kind of, the distance between there is significant between Arlington and Berkeley. It's not quite like the rest of the corridor where the mid-blocks and the uncontrolled crossings are a little bit more frequent. This one's kind of isolated. So we wanted to provide a bit of increased visibility and alert for motorists interacting with pedestrians here at this crosswalk. So in addition to our other treatments on the roadway, we're looking to install an RFB, which is a button actuated flashing light that kind of, again, draws attention to the crosswalk when a pedestrian is looking to cross there. Next slide, please. Cool, okay. So those were just the general, the built features. Again, we're incorporating along the corridor. I've separated out the intersections themselves individually. I know that the commissioners and the public would like to probably walk through them one by one and then just make sure we're clarifying things as we go. For those intersections, I've also identified where the street lights will be affected, if we've affected any, to be relocated. So I know that that's something we can call out as well. So we can jump right in. West Springfield Street, starting right off. On the left, you can see existing conditions here. Two lanes in each direction, the existing curb extensions, a bit of the median there. And on the right, what we're proposing to remove the curb extensions and make the curb line linear through the intersection there. Removing the, what we would call apex ramps. So instead of pushing an individual out into the intersection diagonally, we're making the crosswalks across Tremont perpendicular, and then installing a series of those pedestrian protection islands.
John, would you point out what materials you're using?
Sure, so in this image here, the small dot islands and then the islands that we've lovingly been referring to as pork chops, those are all concrete islands with a granite ring. So they're it's the same type of material that we would be using to reconstruct the corners of those of the intersection, and then the raised crossings will be in asphalt as we would with the roadway surface itself. You can see the slight differentiation in the fill on these images here. So you can see the diagonal hatching is where we
again, talking to Public Works and our Disabilities Commission, replacing the material is going to go in as concrete. So you can see where most of the existing concrete is on the left, and then the hatched areas on the right are what will be concrete. And then the brick pattern, obviously. So that's where we'll be replacing the brick in kind. I guess for note on all of these slides, as part of our design, we're not proposing to affect, relocate, or include anything to do with the treescape along the street. So none of the trees along the roadway are going to be affected by our project, nor are we looking to remove any of them. If there are any questions for Springfield, we can move to the next intersection. Worcester Street here. Again, similar with providing a linear curb line, raising the crossings along Tremont Street to improve that pedestrian experience and accessibility. And then in this instance here, we see one of the bus stops, what we're talking about, the bus platform. A small change from this design, we have proposed to relocate. So this image here is slightly incorrect, but this was the most current design that we wanted to bring to the commission. So the platform here is actually moving backwards up to the far side of the next intersection. So there's just a slight shift along the street there. A number of things go into that. Our conversations with the MBTA and their service planning, where the stops are located, proximities to certain community locations and drainage, those trees we're talking about. So there were a lot of things that we were trying to juggle on where those are built.
John?
Yes, sir.
Question, are there crosswalks crossing Tremont Street here and they're just not drawn in?
Yes, sir, yep. So these are construction plans. The pavement marking plans were a lot busier and didn't do a great job of showing where the materials were different on the corners and things. So there will 100% be striped crosswalks across the side streets, across Tremont Street, the double yellow down the middle, all of our standard pavement markings.
Okay, for the benefit of the public joining in, sure, just be sure to point that out with each intersection.
Sure.
Where there is a crosswalk that's not drawn in.
Sure, yep.
So also, are there flashing light posts at this intersection?
Nope, the only intersection that we're adding any type of equipment or traffic control that would be not a sign is at Appleton. So that's the only place where we're changing what the traffic equipment would look like.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. I have a question. Hi.
Hello.
My name's Gabriella.
The public will have an opportunity to comment at the end of the presentation, so please wait until that time. Thank you.
Okay.
Again, Commissioner, so this in this image here, you'll see, I guess, between the small islands and the pork chop islands, from ramp to ramp on both sides of Tremont Street, just as existing here. We're just going to make the path a little bit more direct, perpendicular, and improve accessibility for those crossings across Tremont. So, I guess we can go to the next slide, Mary. Concord here. Again, this is the pair of bus stops that was slightly modified since submitting for the application. So this bus stop here will move backwards towards Worcester. So the Concord Square and the Worcester stops kind of flip from where they are. And then other than that, there are no other physical changes here because it is a signalized intersection. And so we're trying to minimize the amount of invasive reconstruction that we're trying to do at the signals. So this one here will just have the minor bus stop that will be on the northwest near the residential building, and then that's it. Again, replacing most of the brick back and then just providing the concrete accessible path between the sidewalk concrete and the street side concrete. Next slide, Mary, please. Great. Rutland, a pretty standard example. This is the one that I used for the neutral built elements slide here. So we're making the curb line linear, raising the crossings along Tremont for the side streets there, providing the protection islands for pedestrians, and then the built platform on the upper right hand of the image you can see there. So building that platform out there and connecting it to the accessible spaces. Again, between these pedestrian islands to cross Tremont, replacing those crosswalks. So there will be two crosswalks to cross Tremont, and then the crosswalks along Tremont to cross Rutland's. Next slide, please. So here is where we start to affect some of the streetlights. So I have indicated in the red circles, it's a little fuzzy on here, but you can see within the circles, you can see the existing and then the new locations. So we've tried to minimize the distance from the existing locations that we're moving them, just so that there isn't an issue with lighting or pedestrian experience or the planned character for the intersection. Really trying to just minimize the amount of change we have to impact there. So the top left of the top left red circle there, you can see that the light pole, the comm tower that's over here, will move just barely to the edge of the tree pit. So that's the distance of maybe 10 feet to the left there. The streetlight pole on the top image to the right will move just slightly to the right there. So not quite to the where the person's standing. So just slightly to the right. Our bottom image here, the streetlight moves just about to where the curb extension begins in this image. And then the streetlight on the right, the streetlight on the left moves slightly farther. So actually is almost in front of where that tree pit is, the existing tree is there. For this one, go to the next slide, Mary. Here we have Pembroke and Aguadilla. So what we are looking at is the bus stop after Pembroke Street going away from downtown. We have our built islands to enforce that daylighting, increase the visibility for pedestrians. And then the bus stop inbound is just after Aguadilla, just north of Aguadilla. And then we have here just the one streetlight we're affecting on this side. You can see in the side, the red circle, the left leader arrow is the existing, is the proposed. So you can see our location for the ramp is pretty much where the streetlight is. So we just needed to move it out of the way so that we can build the compliant ramp there at the corner. Brookline. Similar treatments here, linearize the curb line, raise crossings along the street, no bus stops at this particular location. So we're just talking about the built islands. Again, pedestrian crosswalks will just be shifted. So we're retaining those two crosswalks across Tremont Street and just moving them so that they're perpendicular to the curb. One streetlight here. So this streetlight, and you can see in the graphic within the circle, the streetlight's location is within one of the proposed locations for the ped ramp. So we're just shifting it over to the left. It essentially in this video, in this image, would go adjacent to the trash cans there. So somewhere between the trash cans and the tree pit. Canton and the other Aguadilla. A standard application here again, removing curb extensions, raising the side street crossings, pedestrian protection islands, and again, these will be striped crosswalks, two striped crosswalks between these islands to go across Tremont Street. Unfortunately, three streetlights here affected, but so you can see in the upper image, One is within where we're proposing to put the perpendicular pedestrian ramp, so it will be relocated just slightly over. If you can see in that image, in front of the Starbucks front door, there's a small plate. It'll be just to the right of that plate in the sidewalk, so maybe a distance of 5 feet or so. The bottom two, the comm tower on the right-hand side, will move slightly to the left in here, so it'll be within that concrete area. And then the streetlight on the image's left will move, will actually move also towards the concrete area as well. Upton Street. So Upton Street has a location where we've relocated the bus stop away from Dartmouth and Dedham. We're finding a lot of issues with it, with the facilitation of traffic, with the provisions for various safety measures for pedestrians. So we in discussion with the MBTA, proposing to relocate that just slightly over here, a much safer location, away from a lot of turning vehicles and things like that. So we have here, we're removing these kind of curb extensions on either side of Upton Street, creating a linear curb, raising that side street crossing, and then providing a perpendicular crossing for across Tremont Street that abuts the back of this floating bus stop. The one streetlight here, you can see within the red circle, the existing streetlight is right in the middle of our raised pedestrian crosswalk to the bus platform. So we're just relocating that out of the way. So it'll move slightly back towards the concrete area of this image here. And then this area here, because of the various ramps, you can see the corner has a little bit more concrete than it does in existing. So just as we reorient the crosswalks, providing that surround that Public Works has given us direction for, to surround the crossing, the ramp itself with concrete. And then you can see the brick patterning on either side of that. So we're replacing the brick back along the tree pit and over by the side street. Next slide, cool. So Union Park, here we have the existing bus stop in front of the Aquitaine. So we're retaining that bus stop there, building it out in this platform style, including the protection islands for pedestrians. Again, you can see the hatching area to replace in concrete, and then outside of the concrete, replacing the brickwork. Next slide. Waltham, a little bit of an issue we experienced here with where the curb line is. They don't quite line up so well with each other. And we wanted to try and retain as much parking as we could on this relatively short block. So we are proposing this offset with the curb line there, but still raising the crosswalk to go across Waltham, prioritizing pedestrians there. And then you can see the hatching area to replace in concrete, and then the adjacent brick to be replaced in kind. Hanson, similar story on the south there to cross Hanson Street. But in here, we're introducing built protection islands for the crosswalk across Tremont Street. So providing a built offset for the parking so that folks aren't parking on the crosswalk, as well as improving visibility for those pedestrians crossing Tremont Street. The reason that the northeast to the right of that number 33 box, the reason there's not a built island there is because those parking spaces are accessible. And so we're designing those parking spaces to have an easier access to get to the ramp instead of having to navigate a built island. Right here, so you can see this right here. We've been speaking with the owners of the building here, the operators for Cyclorama. This one street light that is in the visual probably will have to move 3 or 4 feet to the left there. So it won't, it'll just be to the edge of the tree in this visual here. Milford, again, with the raised crossing across Milford, And then retaining both of these crosswalks to cross Tremont Street, providing the protection islands here. And again, we're in discussion with those, with Public Works and our consultants for these two crossings, the two ramps at the top there, number 35 and 38, trying to just see what we can provide for additional pedestrian protection in there. So it, that's kind of an ongoing conversation, but we're rebuilding these ramps in concrete with a tactile and then better aligning them to the south side. Dwight, rather simple. We're just removing that one curb extension, providing a linear curb line there, raised crossing to cross Dwight Street, providing the concrete surround for the accessible space, and then replacing the brick furnishing zone and then side street connection in kind. Berkeley Street, we're relocating the bus stop. Right now it is what we would consider near side. So it's on the approach northbound to Berkeley Street in front of the community gardens. We're going to relocate it to the far side so that it's in front of the bicycle shop here. We're going to relocate the blue bike station so that it's further away from the curb line, and then installing a concrete pad so that the front and back of the bus is an accessible path for folks to get on there. So you can see the in the construction plan, the hatched rectangle there, it will be slightly larger. So it will, the concrete space will extend basically the length of the bus, but everything else we're leaving in brick. We didn't want to replace the entire section in concrete. That's a lot of brick to remove. So we just wanted to put in concrete where we needed to for accessibility, and then retain the rest of the area with as is. So.
John, could you go back to that a second and just point out exactly where the concrete will go and the brick will remain?
Sure, so the image here is has been slightly revised, but what you can see is we are taking that long skinny rectangle that goes parallel to Tremont is the existing location for the blue bike station. We're locating that to be adjacent to the concrete, so moving it right out to the edge of the brick area. That's perpendicular to Tremont, that's hatched. That'll be where the new concrete is poured, so connecting the front of the bus to the concrete sidewalk. The issue with this visual, as I said, it's been slightly revised after the submittal we gave for application. So the concrete itself, based on MBTA for the system-wide accessibility, they asked us to put the concrete along the curb. So where you see VGC for vertical curb.
Yep.
So the concrete will extend from what you see as the hatched rectangle along the street to that EBX, the electrical box. So it just kind of makes an L shape.
Right.
The rear door to the front door to the sidewalk. And that's what they've asked us.
Okay.
We don't touch that tree. We don't touch the hydrant. We don't touch the box, you know, but minimal impact on the brickwork and the furnishing there. So.
Okay. Thank you. That's clear.
And then this guy is the Appleton Street mid-block crossing. So we are taking the bus stop that is kind of just north of this on the map here. It's in the driveways of the animal hospital and shelter. And so we're kind of relocating it down here to Appleton to better connect it with some of the accessible spaces as well as the crosswalks. So providing that built bus stop there, a small pedestrian island, the raised crossing across Appleton, and then what you see, those two solid black dots, those are the locations of that RFB, that flashing pedestrian sign that we had talked about that I had shown in the slides earlier. So this is the only addition of a traffic equipment. And we originally had been trying a number of other built treatments for this intersection, trying to provide a pedestrian refuge island in the middle to break up the crossings. Other things to kind of improve pedestrian visibility, but we ran into some issues with where the fire trucks need to turn from Appleton onto Tremont. So it really kind of helped guide our decisions for that. The RFB wasn't initially the first choice, but it was one of the most effective choices that we had once we started to make other considerations. That's what I have for the walkthrough. So if the commissioners have any other questions, we can go back to certain slides, or if there are general questions, I'm happy to answer those.
I would like to ask Mary just a point of order. Mary, given that this is our first video conference, South End District Commission meeting, I just want to make sure we can run this the same way we typically do, mm-hmm. where I ask commissioners for questions first, and then commissioners will start with comments after that, and then we will go to public comment. Is that how we can run this?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Okay. Yeah. Then I will ask commissioners if they have questions.
I have a question. This is Diana. John, where you said there's going to be raised crosswalks, I was a little confused here. What is the height that it's going to be raised?
So the overall elevation of the crosswalk, it basically takes the crosswalk and lifts it 6 inches to meet the sidewalk.
To meet the sidewalk, okay.
So you're walking a little trim on, you never notice a dip. It goes right across.
It goes straight across, okay. I just need that clarified. Thank you.
Yep.
John, it's Peter. I have a question.
Sure, go ahead, Peter.
For those locations where you're needing to move the street lights, can you explain the thinking on that, why the crosswalks weren't adjusted slightly so you did not have to move the street lights?
Sure. So when we, our initial goal with the project was to improve pedestrian experience and accessibility and safety out here. So making those crosswalks perpendicular. If we can look back at the slides, even the crosswalks that we have are not perfectly perpendicular. There's a number of considerations with the locations of the ramp, of drainage, of other utilities, how the raised crossings interact with the corners. So a number of those geometric and like civil and construction considerations for where the pedestrian ramps to cross Tremont Street almost had to go. And we directed our consultant to minimize that. So unfortunately, I know it seemed like there were a lot of slides and a lot of streetlights that we were talking about, but they really did, they tried their absolute best to minimize the amount of relocations that we had to touch for those streetlights. And most of them were, you know, it's a few feet. I asked them, I directed them to, in addition to minimizing the amount of streetlights we had to touch, to move them the shortest distance from their existing location. Again, so that the overall planning and design for the corridor, for the lighting, for the elements of the streetscape were changed as little as possible. So we're gonna keep the same streetlights. They're just gonna be reconstructed on a new base. So they'll be the exact same lights as best we can.
Any other questions from other commissioners? I've got quite a few, so I want to leave you an opportunity first. If not, I'll go to my questions. John, this is a very complex project, and I appreciate the effort that's gone into the planning for this, but I have a lot of questions. The first question I've got is, at the separation between parking lane and bike lanes, you showed one example photograph of one that was already constructed that had a big block of concrete with a signpost stuck in it.
Yep.
That warned people which way the bike lane was versus the parking lane. Are those being proposed here? And if so, where are they and how many?
Sure. Mary, if you can go backwards just to... Hansen.
And I'd like you to also show the picture of that so that sure. The other commissioners can
get back
recall
up
what I'm referring to.
Yep. So I just want to show an example without the red circles. Right there. Stop right there, Mary. Sorry. So just if we can peek at this image, and then I will go to the visual in real life. We can see in the bottom right of this slide here, the black rectangles. So those black rectangles in our plans for 97% of this corridor, we're just looking to do the low, they're 6 inches high, so they're just as a parking stop would be, and they're flat long pieces. So there's nothing that vertical disturbance. The purpose of the pedestrian pork chop islands also serves what you saw as that kind of larger bullnose. So we're not actually installing many as we might need to, because those protection islands serve as an object kind of a marker for drivers.
Okay.
So can we go back to the descriptor slide, Mary?
Right. That one.
So in this instance, what you see in the foreground with that slanted object, the object marker, and then some the sign pole, those would be required only where we didn't have those pedestrian islands built. It's just to alert drivers that there's an object that appears in the roadway where it might be out of alignment. So I'm trying to think where the instances where those would actually happen. They would be more common at a signalized intersection because we can't physically build those pedestrian islands. Mary, if we can go to Concord Street. Yeah, okay, so in this image here, again, we have the fire station on what is the bottom right of the plan view here. So the solid black lines are those low, flat, rectangular objects, and then the kind of the hollow rectangles on the plan would be those more pronounced bullnoses, we would call them, but they're not you know, the Jersey barriers that you'd see on a highway. These are.
So why is one of them double-sided or double-ended with those bullnoses?
So what we do here is, so this is the driveway to the fire station, and
got it. I understand now. Thank you.
They can see.
I couldn't tell what was happening off the right edge of the plan.
Sorry about that.
But now I understand. Is each one of those signposts accompanied by that bright yellow warning sign?
So if we were to install a signpost in the bullnose or in the end treatment, the sign is most appropriate. It's retroreflective. It's the standard MUTCD traffic guidance regulatory sign. The problem is that the only other available option for us is the diamond sign. And in addition to being much wider and kind of getting in the way of things passing on either side of them, they don't look, there's no improvement to the visual. They don't provide something that's a little bit more low profile. The lower profile sign wouldn't provide as much advisory notice that we need. Again, these would only be installed on the items where it would be kind of a surprise to motorists. We don't want an object just to appear in the roadway. So it would only be where there's a break in the linearity.
Okay, basically where one of those large blocks of precast is being proposed, each one of those would get a sign?
I would say most of them. So we have, and most of the bullnoses are only at the signals, and not all of those bullnoses will require the sign because perhaps they are on the end as opposed to the front of a line of these kind of things.
So as an example, in the lower right corner where we've got one of those bullnoses on either end of a short curb length, is there going to be a sign on each end?
I don't anticipate that, no. I only anticipate the sign being on the approach that vehicle. So if the vehicle would be going, a bus, a car, a fire truck, a delivery truck, whatever, going from the left of the screen to the right of the screen, basically coming from Roxbury going into downtown, that would be the most appropriate location for the sign. The far side object, there wouldn't be a need because we've already alerted folks that there is something there.
Okay, good. Thanks for clearing that up. Okay, that's one question. I've got a couple more. Bear with me. Let's see. Are these curb separations, they look like a dashed line on the plan, and I don't know if that's just symbolic or if that's literal. Are they actually segments of curbs that are separated?
The delineation for the bike lane between parking?
Right.
Parking and bike lane? Yep, so it's non-continuous. And we're not even actually installing them too far subsurface in the roadway.
Sorry, could you point to what you're talking about? I thought that was the scope of work line.
Sure.
Were you talking about the big dash?
Yeah, the big dash line.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
It's actually an object in the road, John.
So they're not continuous where we can help it. That helps us kind of mitigate any drainage impacts that we would be concerned about along the street. It also provides kind of permeability from the bike lane or the parking lane, so that if they're leaving their car, they have the buffer space, and then they're not required to step on or over these objects. There is some break in them. Again, they're only 6 inches high, and they're approximately 10 inches wide. So they're wide and low enough that someone could step out and step on top of it. We wanted to design them so that they
And work. How are they embedded in the ground?
Right now, they're going to be pinned. So they're going to be drill pinned 2 to 3 into the roadway itself.
I'm going to ask the question again. Sure. Is the dashed line symbolic or is that literal? Are those the actual lengths of curb with these actual breaks between them, or is that just abstractly symbolic?
I just want to make sure we're talking about the same dash line, because that center line through the middle of the street is not.
That's not what I'm referring to.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Right. Yes, the locations of the curbing that you see on the plan here, those bolded rectangles, those are the proposed locations for the curbing itself. So they're 10 feet long, spaced at about 10 feet between each other.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you, John. Let me just make sure I am asking all the questions I've got.
John, I did have a question.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
It's yes, Catherine, go ahead.
Sorry, if you're finished, great, but I was trying earlier and I guess I was muted.
Oh, I'm not finished, but why don't you go ahead and I'll go back to my questions.
Oh, excellent, thank you. I was wondering, John, what the overall approach was to replacing brick, either in kind with more brick or with concrete. I know it's different according to your review there by different intersections. So was there an overall approach in terms of let's save as much brick as we can, or I'm just interested in why some intersections seem to have more preservation of brick as opposed to others. For example, the Berkeley Street, that big stretch of concrete, at least it seems like a big stretch of concrete. So can you just speak to that?
Sure. So some of the intersections where they're either a T intersection, it's just a one street coming from one side, or the Berkeley Street bus stop relocation. We were really only looking at the two ramps on either side of just that one crossing. So it's really just two points that we're trying to relate to each other. And we needed the concrete as a surrounding area around the ramp to make sure that that pedestrian approach and receiving side of the crossing is compliant, is accessible for folks using that crossing there. If there's two side streets coming in, what happens is the variables start to compound a little bit. And so when we're looking at where we're surrounding those ramps with concrete, they almost touch, or they basically touch. So in some instances, if there's 8 inches between where two spaces of concrete would go, we have just put the concrete together so that the construction, the capabilities for construction are a lot easier. But we know that the brick here has, you can see in the existing, it's been preserved along the furnishing zone and as much of the up to the corner as possible. So we kind of wanted to go back, and when we were done implementing the accessibility requirements and things for those provisions, replacing the brick back where it is existing, and we didn't need to remove it. Just knowing that the character of the street has brick in places, and we'd like to keep it there as much as possible.
Hey, Catherine, I think that was a really good question. And when we get to comments, if it hasn't already been brought up, before I get to my comments, I have some recommendations where I think we could improve the preservation of brick without compromising the goals of the project or accessibility.
That's great.
I think are minor, but nuances are important in the district. And I think we can achieve all objectives there.
Okay. So thank you, John and John.
You're welcome. Catherine, did you have any further questions?
No, that's it.
Okay, great. If another commissioner doesn't have questions and wasn't inadvertently muted when they were trying to pipe up, I'll go back to my questions. I have a question about the light pole relocations that Peter was also questioning. A couple of those light poles are moving in close proximity to tree pits. And I know that PFD, because as a landscape architect, I encounter this a lot with PFD and streetscapes, they like an offset between light poles and trees because they worry that the tree will obscure the efficiency of the light pole. And I just want to make sure you've coordinated with PFD on that, because I wouldn't want to find out after the fact that PFD ruled that the tree has to come out because the light pole is moved.
Understood. Nope. So they have been receiving and commenting on the plans there. And before we get to initiating construction or final approvals, they will most certainly have to sign off on where those streetlights go and how they are, their new bases, the new locations of the bases are powered or connected. So they're definitely going to have a final say on whether or not those streetlights are too close, or if they prefer it a half a foot to one side, or that type of thing. So,
right. Okay.
They absolutely are.
If by any chance PFD says there's no other place for the light pole to go except where you proposed it, but mm-hmm. that the tree needs to come out, I would like to for BTD to at least consider the replacement of that tree in a location that would be not in conflict with the light.
We would certainly try to find another location for the light that may not be the ideal location for the light, but would preserve the existing tree.
Okay.
So again, I don't want to like commit, but I would say that would be our most likely path of you know, decision making, not to remove the tree and throw a new kind of juvenile tree in there. Keep the
existing. That's great, John. I appreciate that, because the tree-lined streets of the South End are one of the character-defining elements of the district. So we certainly want to be careful with that. And then, so I appreciate that. And the second thing is, when those light poles are being relocated that also carry the street signs that tell you what street you're on, mm-hmm. One of those light poles you showed me, and this probably affects more than one street corner, would move so far away from the corner that the cross street sign would make no sense, because it's so distant from the cross street itself. So would you keep the cross street sign on that light pole, or would we end up with another independent signpost carrying the street sign for the cross street? And I'd rather not see the latter, just because it adds clutter to the district. So, you know, how is that being coordinated?
Right now, I don't have an answer for that, but it's something that I'm happy to take down. And I agree with you, and I don't want to add things in the pedestrian realm that additional objects that are not required. So we'll have to take a look through that and identify exactly where it's what we would consider too far kind of thing. So I understand what you're saying. There was one or two instances where the light would move from one side of the curb extension to the other side of the curb extension, and thus would be from Tremont. But we'll have to take a look at that.
Okay. As long as that's something you're mindful of, and sure. If it results in any change, of course, you'd have to come back to Mary and she'd have to review it with us. I'm just scanning my sheet for questions. Give me a moment. It won't take a second. Actually, I think that's all my questions. So I think we can go to commissioner comments now. So I'll take comments. Who wants to start?
Well, John, John Freeman here. I missed part of the presentation. I'm sorry, I was having some technical difficulties. I think it all looks great, and I think it's your questions have been appropriate to try to restrict clutter. My only concern, actually, similar to Catherine's, is that we're going to end up with leftover sort of slices of brick, and I just want to make sure. If you'll cover this, that what we end up with is something that's consistent. I'm hearing voices in the background.
Unmuted or something. Mary, can we go to another, and not a signal location, just any of the other unsignalized intersections?
Sure.
Sure, here. Rutland's fine. I think that's at the corner of the library park there.
You can take all the comments. Why don't you take all the comments and then address them, because I have a feeling that there's going to be some similar concerns, and John and Medea will probably state what I was trying to say, state in a better landscape appropriate way.
Did you have any further comments, John, that were different from that one?
Nope. That's good for me. Other than that, I think it's a good proposal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Commissioner.
Anybody want to go next? Who's anybody with other comments?
Yeah, I have a few questions. Can you hear me?
We haven't gotten to public comment yet, so we're still on commissioner comment. Once we get to public comment, you'll have a chance to voice your comments.
Okay.
Hey Joe, is there a way that you can keep public muted? Because I keep hearing voices and whispers and things, and it's a little bit distracting.
Sure, if we could just remind people, one, to mute yourselves when you're not speaking. And then I am trying to mute people who haven't done that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
John?
Peter, Catherine, Diana, if comments?
Yeah, I have a comment which relates to my question and Catherine's comment and your comment and John's comment. I'm concerned. I asked the question about the relocation of the streetlights because I'm concerned about the ability to match the brick to what is going to remain in both in terms of appearance and installation. And I think that Mr. Monticelli said that some of these crosswalks are not going to be exactly perpendicular. So I'm wondering, is it really essential to move as many streetlights as is being proposed? Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. So I think if I could address those points in reverse. So the streetlights, if we look at Rutland, obviously it has the most modifications for the streetlights. If we look at that top right circle there, so the north or northeast corner. If you can kind of see that that crosswalk doesn't perfectly go right across Tremont Street, we would have to pull the ramps a distance away from the intersections if we were to make it like perfectly 90 degrees, and then we would start to run into a whole handful of other conflicts and considerations. There would be more brick that we would disturb. There might be more utilities that we would disturb. So I understand that it looks like a very minimal relocation, but if we could not take that pedestrian ramp in that top right circle, we couldn't take that pedestrian ramp and move it to the left. There's just the physical space and the requirements that we have for the geometric dimensions. So it's just kind of, once the ramp was put where it needed to go, that streetlight was in conflict. And so we worked as hard as possible to not to obviously just throw the streetlight 20 feet down the way where it was less inconvenient. We tried to keep it as close as possible to where it was. So it's just moving slightly down or to the side there. And then about the brick replacement, Commissioner Amadeo, I know that we're gonna talk about some of the revisions to what we have shown for the material spaces. So I just want to clarify, What you don't see on the construction plans is existing brick and existing concrete that we're not affecting. So I mean, if you imagine the corridor, it's a consistent concrete sidewalk with basically a continuous brick furnishing zone. So where we're proposing to replace the brick at these intersections is just an extension of the existing brick that we have to disturb for various reasons. If we're rebuilding a curb because of the drainage or because of a raised crossing, those types of things, we're gonna have to remove the brick in order to accomplish that. And so then it's just replacing the brick because there is brick adjacent to it. So I apologize because it just looks uniform, everything that's not bolded here. But if you were to imagine against the building faces is where the concrete sidewalk exists currently. So we're just rebuilding the brick adjacent to the roadway. Looks like there's isolated pockets of the brick, but it's just my replacing brick where it exists currently that we have to disturb. So hopefully that addresses a little bit of what you're saying, Commissioner, and then Commissioner Hunt, hopefully that links back to what you're asking about, just why it looks like there's sporadic brick here and there. It's because there's existing brick now and we will likely disturb it. And I want to replace it in most places that you see here.
Peter, did that answer your question or comment?
It answered it. I'm not sure it's that convincing, but I understand there's a continuous brick furnishing strip on the whole length. But I remain concerned about the match, both in the installation and the appearance for where brick is going to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Peter, if it's okay with you, I plan to get to that in my comments. And hopefully that will slightly improve the situation you're concerned about.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other commissioner comments?
Just a quick one. I want to reinforce that issue about the brick. But first, I want to say thank you for taking care of addressing the safety issues. I think that's wonderful that you're making those improvements.
Mm-hmm.
And the introduction of additional concrete into an historic neighborhood is, of course, not desirable. And brick does not preclude accessibility, contrary to what people think in some agencies. So I guess that's enough said. John will talk about what he was going to suggest.
Mm-hmm. So thank you, Catherine. If it's okay, I'll start with my comments. But by all means, if you have another comment and you want to pipe up, go ahead. Actually, I'm going to apologize by saying I'm going to start my comments with a question that I forgot to ask. And that is the buses appear to be stopping in the travel lane to pick up passengers. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
And that is going to be an improvement for traffic movement and traffic safety?
So that'll be an improvement for MBTA operations and the folks who are riding the bus. We acknowledge that there's only the 43 that runs along the street here. So these are we're only affecting that one line. When we look at the frequency of the buses, what we do notice is that the time between even our highest frequency parts of the weekday, we don't anticipate that it'll actually have a severe or a significant impact on traffic. I understand the idea of it like blocking all cars behind it, but the amount of buses, the frequency of the buses that run up and down this corridor are not as frequent as we have on many other lines, especially in an area that's this dense.
Okay.
And so what, I mean, it is, it's taking the pedestrian, it's taking the humans, it's taking the people and prioritizing their ability to get on and off the bus, their visibility to the driver and the driver's ability to get against a curb, mm-hmm. in case it's a new curb, but against a curb, as opposed to having motorists parking in the bus stops or a delivery truck deciding that it's okay for them to be there for a second.
Right. Yeah, I got it. It's not Washington Street with the silver line. Right.
I mean, right. Even the frequency of those silver lines is higher than the 43.
Right. And I want to echo what Catherine said about the value of the project in terms of pedestrian safety and also driver safety. It's a great project for that purpose. And as designed, it's going to accomplish that. So good job so far. And our job, of course, is to preserve the character of the district. So my comments are going to be in that vein. The islands, I think we have to talk about the islands, with the exception of the ones that are the bus islands where pedestrians are going to be. Mm-hmm. I would like to request that those islands be brick. I think there's absolutely no reason for those pork chop islands to be concrete when we have a historic district that we're talking about. So if you've got this corner, we're looking at Rutland Square as an example, three out of those four corners are non-pedestrian islands. The crosswalks go to the edges of them, not across the top of them.
Yep.
So I see no reason why those couldn't be brick.
Sure, I understand. And I know it's a slightly different consideration, I guess, than the sidewalk where cars are not. I understand that we're not building places where pedestrians need to be. And the roadway is not brick either. It should be cobblestone. We are making carve outs in a variety of ways between the curbs for various more modern things that are just kind of assumed. I understand that it could be brick.
John, I'm going to stop you. You're not going to win this one.
Okay.
They're going to be brick.
I'll
we're going to go on to the next comment. We could be here all night on that.
I'll make a note.